Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 11, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I am Scott Long, and what the heck is a check party?
I gotta tell you, man.
Look at my notes, and I'm like, what the hell is a check party?
I gotta tell
you. It's a funny story, so... Don't keep me waiting here.
You know, being the celebrities that we are, a lot of times people want to invite us to things to play in them. You know, I don't know if it's because they're grateful for the coverage we give them or whatever, but I got invited to play in a tournament this week.
Cool.
And it was actually a World Series qualifier, but it was in one of the bar leagues, the local bar leagues and the free leagues. And Scott, I have to admit, I haven't played in one of these since like you and I played them in four or 5 years ago.
A little different, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's different. And I totally forgot what it was like, you know. And, you know, you and I are going to be having this, you know, this sort of seminar at Derby Lane teaching people, you know, the etiquette of poker and what it's like to play in a poker room, that kind of thing, for their first time and everything. And I got to tell you, a lot of these people can benefit from it because, I mean, there were people at my table, and it's a social thing for them, you know, and I forget that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, you get two old biddies sitting next to each other who know each other, eating their chicken wings and talking, and it's their turn to deal, and they're like, what's going on? You know, we're like, you have the deck in your hand, you know? So it was driving me crazy, but, you know, I had a lot of fun. I was just there to, you know, I wasn't really planning on winning. I just wanted to make an appearance and take photos or whatever. But so we get involved in a hand. It's my last hand of the day because I haven't had a hand all day. I get ace-queen suited, and I'm very, very, very short stacked. So I shove. Call, gets to this guy. Okay, now this guy had showed up late, but you could tell he knew how to play poker because he shuffled the way he shuffled. You know, he did the whole boxing and shuffle, 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 box, shuffle crap, you know. So he knew what he was doing with the cards, so he knew how to play. And he's looking at his cards and he's looking at the pot and he leans on the table and he says, all right, let me ask everyone. I'm in for my tournament life. There are three callers there. And he leads up and he goes, now, let me ask everyone here, if I call, are we going to do a check party? Are we all invited to a check party? I said, dude, you know what? You can't. Now, this guy already earlier in the event had misread his hand twice and misread the board at least once. And I was like, all right, dude, look, you can't do that. I mean, you know, I'm not being a jerk or anything or a Deutsche Bank, but. You can't say that, okay? I'm in for my tournament life. You can't tell everybody. You're colluding with them, you know? And he's like, "What?" He didn't even know what colluding was.
Of course.
I was like, oh, my God. All right. So he goes, no, I know, but I got a good hand here. All right. And I'm like, you can't say that either. Just call or fold. So he calls. I have ace-queen. I don't pair up on the board. It comes like 4-5-3. An 8 comes on the turn. And then like a jack on the river or something. I don't know. Maybe a 10 on the river. So I turn up, I go, I have ace-queen. Guy says, a guy on my left says, that beats me. The woman says, all I got is king-jack. Gets to the guy who was like, hey, let's have a check party. He goes, I have ace-8. I win. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So not only is the guy who wanted to cheat, who was considering folding, beat me, right? But then it's like he was so, like, he thought ace-8 was his great hand. And we're playing six-handed at this table or seven-handed. And it's like, all right, whatever. So now this is early in the tournament, Scott. I mean, there was like 100 and something people there, maybe 106. And I think maybe like five people had gotten knocked out at this point. I mean, it was brutal. I couldn't see my cards. It was dark. It was a bar. So anyway, I'm like, all right, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I'll leave. I get home. I get an email from the guy who runs the league. And he sends me the photo of the winner. And it's the guy who asked for the check party. How does he win this thing?
Oh, that's great. God.
So I'm hoping that he's first in line when we're at Derby Lane on January 6th. Hosting this thing because I want to talk to him a little bit. You know, I can't believe it. And then, like, right after that, I'm like, you know what? I'm right down the street from the Silks, Scott's favorite card room. I'm going to go play. So I go in and I play, and I actually doubled my buy-in, like, in five hands. I felt really good, and I was playing pretty well. And there's a guy next to me, and he's getting a massage. He sits down next to me, and he's real loud and kind of funny and kind of obnoxious. And I'm like, I know this guy from somewhere. And then he starts getting a massage, right? And there's a woman behind him massaging him, and he's like, nice to meet you. He's saying this to her, right? He's flirting with her and everything. And I turned to him, I said, dude, have you really met her if you haven't faced her yet? And he's like, hey, that's a good point, you know? So he starts talking to her. So it turns out it's like this real famous, like, DJ personality guy, Chris Fisher or whatever, of 97X,
sure.
Maybe.
Fisher in the Morning.
Yeah, Fisher in the Morning, Fisher in the Boy, or I don't know what the guy's name is. But anyway, he's sitting next to me, and he was an okay player. But, you know, he gave somebody action. Somebody went all in for like 20-something bucks. He gave him action with Jack 8 of hearts, and he made a straight flush.
Yes.
What the hell? I have never made a straight flush in my life. This guy calls off 20 bucks of his $100 stack with Jack 8, makes a straight flush, gets a ticket into a satellite, gets 20 bucks cash, you know, gets the massage therapist to do whatever it is she's doing to him. I'm like, give me a break. I don't understand. When did quality poker go out the window?
I'm going to say that quality poker went out of the window the very first time somebody played poker. Back when they invented it, when it was that Pokwa or whatever it was back then, there were two guys that were sitting around, probably getting drunk, and they put these cards out and were like, hey, let's play this game. And one of the guys sucked. And that's how poker started. So it was all the way back to that.
I thought for sure you were going to say it was right around the time when Al Gore invented the inner tubes.
No, I see that joke's kind of old now. I'm moving on to right. I'm trying to play back into, like, you know, 1800s now.
All right, well, moving on then. Let's move on to some other things that the Annie Up Empire we'll be doing very soon. I'm excited. We're going to Chicago, man.
Yeah. This time next week, we'll be freezing our baguettes off. And we will indeed be freezing. Well, actually, you know, here's the thing. It's so cold in Chicago right now, Chris, that it's impossible for us to freeze our baguettes off because they're just going to stick to us.
That's really nice.
So we're going to be, yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice.
You know, Chicago Brian, one of our fans up there, sent me you know, a photo on Facebook today. 2 degrees.
Oh.
Picture of his iPhone with the temperature. 2 degrees.
Oh, my God.
And that's Fahrenheit, too.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So we will be freezing. Well, we're going to have a lot of fun up there for the Anti-Up Chicago Poker Classic and the Scott Long Poker Classic.
The second one, actually.
So, again, we hope to see all of our Chicagoland friends out there at the Irish American Center. All the details are at the maineventcharitygames.com, but that is Friday and then Saturday up there, and our good friend Chicago Joe picking us up from the airport.
Yeah, he said we're going to love his nice and warm, heated car.
That's right. So he's saving us the whole train ride into town. So he's saying, well, we got fans that just fall over and help us out, and, you know, Chicago Joe, we just love the guy.
God, we appreciate that. You know, and the other thing, too, is I notice on our notes here that you say, come see us and buy Scott an old style.
Exactly.
Why, if our baguettes are sticking to us, I'd like for them to say, come see us and buy Chris a hot chocolate.
It's never too cold for beer, buddy. Never too cold for beer.
Beer cubes.
Beer cubes. And here is the most interesting thing about the Chicago trip, Chris, is that Tuesday, before we leave, you and I and two of our great columnists, Dr. Frank Toscano and John Lanier, who writes our online column, we are going to be teaming up, Team Anti Up, at the Cards and Bars event out of the Tampa Bay Downs. getting a lot of calls on this thing. So if you're local to the Tampa Bay area, you want to get out there and get out there early to sign up because it's going to be a big field, I think.
Yeah.
And you and I have a last longer bet.
We do. It's very exciting.
Now, let me think back to last week's show.
Yes.
And I believe there was a question from Dr. Frank Toscano about last longer bets and how you don't gamble. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe your answer was, Frank, it's not gambling because I know I'm going to win.
Against you.
And so all right. You know, the gauntlet has been thrown down.
It is on.
And the stakes for our last longer bet have never been higher. All right, you and Faso, you ran for the Hundy.
Yep.
And, you know, we've had other last longer bets of minuscule amounts, but this one is going to be a life-changing amount. It's because we are staying at the glorious Residence Inn on Magnificent Mile in Chicago. One huge, nice, comfy king bed with fellow down pillows and blankets and blah, blah, blah. And then a sleeper sofa.
A sleeper sofa?
Sleeper sofa. That's how they say it in Chicago.
Oh, okay. I have no idea.
Sofa everywhere else, but up there, you know, they got a little dialect thing going on. So sleeper sofa. Obviously, we are not going to spoon in the big king bed.
Oh, sure. So, now you say that, but when we were talking about it earlier, you're like, well, we could just keep one foot on the floor.
Oh. Now you're throwing out lies. So one of us is going to be comfy in the luxurious
king-size
bed of the very nice Residence Inn. The other one of us will have a bar sticking up our back.
Well, you're used to that, so.
Oh! So yes, I am bringing my A-game to the cards and bars because I am going to be enjoying that bed.
I was going to call you Tom Franklin, but I didn't know if enough people listening to this show would get that.
Let's just scratch him right off the
He'll never be on the show anyways. So.
Any up guest list. All right. One fewer there. All right. Come out to the Cards and Bars. Watch us fiercely battle. And then, of course, if you're up in Chicago, love to see you out there for the TV event and play some Chinese poker with us.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. But, you know, one thing that I regretted missing was Apes last night.
I have a feeling you probably didn't regret it.
Yeah, I actually didn't regret it. I feel bad that the streak has ended because the only one I ever missed ever was when I had my surgery that time, and that was like against my will.
But you know, in your defense, last night was more painful than the strategy because you had to go watch the Tampa Bay Lightning play.
Yeah, you know, it was like a choice between watching the Lightning lose for free because someone gave me a ticket or watching myself lose for $5.50. Pretty easy choice there, man. I was like, you know what? I am not going to put myself through that agony and pay for it when I can put myself through the Lightning's agony and, you know, and get a nice, you know, nice night out. So I feel bad that I didn't play and the streak ended, but, you know, hey, I'm sorry.
Surprisingly, people did miss you.
Really?
You were missed.
They were just missed busting my balls.
Well, no, but see, they did not miss that because they were doing that anyhow.
Oh, okay.
And, I figured. There was a rumor spreading that I was made aware of that you were not playing last night because you were busto.
No.
No money on PokerStars. And, of course, I said, absolutely that's the reason he's not here.
Of course you did. That is definitely not it.
I am going to forward that rumor as much as I can. I think it was on the Huffington Post this morning. Drudge called me up for a comment. And I'm going to spread that lie as much as I can.
Yeah. No, that is definitely not it. And the other thing, too, is I could just use e-checks and put more money on. So that is definitely not it. I unregistered that morning. And, you know what? You know, I figured somebody had to have a chance, you know. And I wanted to give you your best odds of winning a banana, but clearly that didn't happen.
Oh, I was so frustrated again. I mean, this whole Apes has just been a wash for me this year.
Yeah.
Always finishing, like, in the bottom third. Always having a couple good hands and one or two bad hands, and boom. I love playing Padukie. It was fun.
Yeah.
Until you had that one bad hand.
Yeah, it always happens that way.
I think I had, like, an 8-6 versus an 8-7 against Rice. That guy. Rice F8-8. I can't tell you somebody in all the Apes that has frustrated me more, other than maybe Half Mike. That's right, Half Mike. Who was actually at my table last night but didn't frustrate me. But this Rice dude has my number.
Yeah, dude, he specializes in beating us in this thing. I mean, he's the guy that beat me in the Raz event that time when I made a 6.54 and he made like a 6.53 to win it. You know, I mean, it's a specialty. He's a great guy though. He retired from the service, so he's a great guy.
Yep, and we got tangled in probably six hands heads up.
Wow.
And I believe he won five of them.
Wow.
I had no chance, but I am very excited to announce that when we finish the show today, I will be addressing a big box full of a stuffed PokerStars monkey and, of course, the coveted Badooki Anti-Up Apes banana trophy.
Yeah.
And sending it to the great city of Columbus, Ohio.
Wow. Fix.
Steph Selby takes down the title last night, and I'm just going to assume that he's a Buckeye fan because there's probably only about three people in Columbus that aren't. And so I'm excited that it's going back home.
And all those three people are in prison.
Oh, very nicely. Very nicely played. But anyhow, our winner, Steph's hubby, who goes by Ryan, goes by his real name.
He goes by his real name, Ryan.
called in, you know, and we like this. See, this is the difference between Buckeyes and the rest of people. Buckeyes, right after they win, they call and congratulate themselves. Everybody else lets the glare go for a couple days, tell their friends and family, put it on their Facebook page, and then calls our hotline 2 days later.
So what you're saying is the Ohio State football team hasn't made a phone call in years.
Ooh! See, I set them up for you. You knock them out of the park. But let's listen to what our listener called in with last.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Ryan, also known as Steph's Hubby from Columbus, Ohio. I just took down the Badoogie event. I've been listening to the PokerCast for about the last year, and I got all cut up so I could start again, or so I could start fresh. For 2010, and I just happened to get in for the Badoogie event and sat down and won it. So I've got to get a heads up to Zerka Boy and also to Poker Geek. They were very tough competition, and man, that was a hard final table. So thank you so much, and I can't wait to see you guys in 2010.
Well, once again, congratulations, Ryan. We appreciate that. And that banana and monkey is on its way. And we got to mention.
Yeah.
This star-studded final table.
I mean, the cream always rises to the top in Apes, it seems. It's remarkable. You know, the funny thing was I got home last night, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to play some poker online because the wife was sleeping, and I had a little bit of a fix that I wanted to take care of because I didn't play at all. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm probably home in time to see what's going on. They're probably still playing. And sure enough, it's the final table. I just missed Colombo going out in seventh place. I was very happy for him. But then, man, Poker Geek MN again?
Yes.
And then Gap Band and Zerka Boy? God.
Yeah. Murderer's Row. Murderer's Row.
And it looked like for a minute there, like Gap Band was going to come back from being way down, and then he went out. I think he went out fourth. And Zerka Boyd was down like really low, like to 6,000 or something, and ended up taking the chip lead with 51K. I was like, this is awesome. And then somehow he lost it. I was playing on, you know, on another table too, so I wasn't paying attention too much. But when it got down to heads up, I watched pretty much every hand. It's pretty pretty exciting to watch these guys go at it, you know.
It is, and as much as I love our friend Poker Geek MN, and kind of thought that it would be kind of cool for him to win his third banana out of the last four or something like that, I was not looking forward to sending him yet another package addressed to Poker Geek MN. We still don't know this guy's name. He's probably going to be our player of the year now. We don't know his name.
Well, maybe we'll have him on the show, and he'll have to admit who he is.
We'll trap him, yeah.
You know, if I'm going to make a guess or not, like I think
Ford?
He's... I think he's Jeffrey Lissandro.
Oh, yes, that would be. Maybe he's that Isadroar guy or whoever that online guy is that no one knows now.
Oh, Islander.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
It's $3 million a night.
Well, the big event is coming up, the main event. It's a horse double stack, $20 plus two on January 13th. There is a free roll on December 30th. And so we're going to dedicate our next show to tips, power tips for horse.
Absolutely. And, pretty exciting. It went so well with Greg Raymer last Power Tips. that next week we are going to bring on absolutely no one to do the power tips.
Man, you're getting me all excited. I thought you had a surprise guest for me. I didn't know about.
No, no. The surprise guest is it's just going to be you and me, the two chuckleheads, giving tips for horse.
Well, we asked Scotty Wynn, but we didn't have enough beer in the fridge to get him to
Yeah, commit. Yeah. I'm not inviting that dude over, man. I protect my beer, and there's no way I can go toe-to-toe with him. But, you know, Scotty is a world champion, correct?
Yeah, World Series champion.
And, of course, we have a new champion now, too. And one of the interesting things about the November 9
Pardon
is...
Pardon your pun.
is that... Harris puts all the money, the prize money for the final nine players, or they pay out ninth place money to everyone, right?
Right, right, right.
And then they put the rest of it in an interest-bearing account, all
right? Right.
And I'm like, hey, that's kind of cool. So, you know, it generates a little bit more money. So, you know, when the players come back, and then they distribute the interest on the same kind of formula that they do the regular thing, right?
Right.
And I gotta say, Chris, you know, it never occurred to me. I was trying to. I never occurred to me to think how much interest is generated.
Yeah.
In middle months, and I gotta say, now that I know, I'm still chuckling a little bit. they put $15,847,250 in the bank, presumably a bank that's not going to go under. And in those a couple months, it accrued $1,321.
Wow.
Massive.
How do people live on that $15 million when they have it if they're only making $1,300 interest, man?
That was only a couple months. But, you know, so then they split out the prize pool. So champion got $607. So that's good. He can make a buy-in at most Florida tournaments now. And... all the way down to the end, $3.
$3. Oh my God!
That's not even enough to get the Ellis Island steak dinner.
$3.
You can get three shrimp cocktails down at Golden Gate, but only if you have your Players Club card.
Wow. Well, what do you suggest? Do you think that they did they put it like in a crappy interest bearing account, or was there?
I know. Here's the thing: they don't want to put it in, you know, some kind of, you know, day trader account or something. You know,
oh yeah,
it could go away. I mean, yeah, it's probably a safe account. So, and then you know, interest rates are pretty low now too. So I guess it's not all that shocking. You should never think about it. You just think millions of dollars. You just think it's going to be, I don't know, more than $1,300 and 21.
I know, because even if you, because what, that's like 117 days, so that's like 3 months. So even if you did it, that's a quarter. If you did it for the whole year, that's only like $5,000. You telling me you only make $5,000 interest on $15 million account? I mean, come on. That can't be right.
That's why you got to keep working, man. There's no retirement anymore.
No more retirement. Especially when you're making $3, man. $3. Good God.
Well, you know, I'm learning all kinds of stuff about big money this week. I talked to one of our poker room managers here because you did a great column in our last issue about people not wanting the pictures in the magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
And people like poker geeks that don't want their names known. So we talked about, you know, the whole IRS threshold because stuff gets reported to the IRS, right?
Yeah.
So I was talking to him about making sure everything was right. And he actually printed out the form from the IRS, which I had never looked at. And, you know, I don't know how many of our other listeners haven't also looked at that and been curious about the IRS thresholds for reporting winners, but I got the goods now, Chris. And I'm going to share them.
It's pretty sad that you and I have never looked at it because we've won one.
That's right. We've never had the opportunity where it's even remotely been a consideration for us.
So sad.
All right, so on the 2010 form coming up, if you win a poker tournament, you don't have to report, or I shouldn't say you don't have to report, because you have to report everything you win.
Yeah, yeah.
Theoretically. But the room does not have to fill out a form and report to the IRS if the winning is less than $5,000 minus the buy-in. All right, I've heard that before, I think. So you remember to buy us to buy in. And what's important about this, too, is if you're doing a chop, and the same manager I talked to, I mean, he's always on me because he's watching chops in his room and just thinks it's knuckleheadness that some guy will accept, you know, if it's a $350 buy-in tournament, that he'll accept a chop of $550. because now he's just like 150 over the threshold for reporting. So now he's going to have to, pay all this stuff. Even though, again, reminder, that you should be reporting all of it anyhow.
Right.
But wink, wink, we know what's going on. So remember that when you're doing chops that, if you want to cheat Uncle Sam.
That's right.
Make sure it's not more 5,000 minus the buy-in. Now, this is where it gets confusing, though, which is interesting, is for other poker-related giveaways and jackpots. Everybody's dragging this dollar now and giving away high hands and bad beats and blah, blah, blah. The threshold is $600 and also 300 times the wager.
Yeah, I don't get that part.
And this poker manager I was talking to says, he doesn't really get it either because what is the wager when they drag a dollar out of the pot?
Yeah.
Is the wager 50 cents because you're dividing it among the 10 players at the table? And, of course, that's not a static thing because it could be 9 players, it could be 6, it could be 4. But so that's why he's just – when he gives away stuff, he always makes it $5.99 and Charlie goes with it that way. But there's a lot of leeway, I guess, in what actually would count towards that.
Yeah, I just don't get it. I don't know if that means the final wager, the minimum wager, I don't even know what that means. That's why I don't think anyone else does either, because they all do $5.99. It doesn't make any sense. And it's all your interpretation of it, right? Because you're not going to have an IRS agent show up and say, okay, no, this is what it means. It's on a form. So, I don't know. It makes no sense. And I'm sure that also relates to other games and other games of chance like slots and everything, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. And if you get away from poker and want to burn some money, slot machines, if you win more than $1,200, you got a form coming to you. Yeah. And Keno, $1,500. That one time a year that someone actually wins $1,500 in Keno somewhere in the world. Talk about a game where you just bend over and they give you Vaseline. Jeez.
Keno. Man. You're getting worse and worse every week, dude.
Keno is just terrible. The only good thing about Keno, though, and my wife and I exploit this all the time, good place to get free drinks.
Free drinks, yeah. I was thinking.
Yeah, you sit in that Keno lounge, you just kick back, knock your shoes off as long as your socks don't stink, and play a dime game of Keno and let that little hot waitress come around and get free beer. Free beer for you. $1, $2 beer for those of us who remember to tip.
Well, I don't drink beer, so I don't have to tip her either. I'd be bored out of my mind hanging out with you in the Keno Lounge. Hey, we had some pretty good stuff break this week, so why don't you tell us what's going on the Anti-Up News Desk?
Absolutely. After reviewing legislation that would rescind the federal ban on internet gambling, the nonpartisan Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation. Wow. That's probably a long line to get on that. The nonpartisan Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation has determined that decriminalizing internet poker alone would raise nearly $42 billion in taxes over the next decade. That comes from the Las Vegas Advisor.
Wow.
$42 billion.
And that's for decriminalizing it.
Exactly. Put that in an interest-bearing account, and that's,
That's like $3.
$7.
Hey, Scott, how's this for irony? In the year that poker players Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle were eliminated early as contestants on The Amazing Race, the finale takes place in Las Vegas. One of the challenges at the end involves stacking $1 million worth of poker chips in the Monte Carlo poker room.
Yeah, boy, I had so many emotions going through watching this finale. One, because, it's these guys go all over the world and they're all like 97 airports, right?
Yeah.
And they're finally an airport that I spent half my life in. I'm like, hey, I know that. I know that. That's where that you get that Subway pizza smell that's gross when they're running through there. And then, of course, then they're running around all over Las Vegas. And then I'm thinking, oh, my God, Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle, how hilarious is this? Where they spend most of their time, they get eliminated, they're not there, right?
Yeah.
And then they show up at the Monte Carlo poker room, one of my favorite poker rooms, and I know yours too.
Yeah.
In all of Las Vegas. And they have a challenge where they have to stack chips.
And that Mexican guy was still sitting at a table pulling out hundreds from his wallet.
Exactly. He was on the side there and just whoop.
But you have to think that they planned on Maria Ho and Tiffany Michelle possibly being around at the end it feels like that. That's why they had this finale there. And now instead it's just salt in their wounds.
Right. All right, and then finally, one day after winning the BC Poker Championship and $364,000, Sofon Sek was arrested on charges that he was involved in the Surrey Six slayings, in which six people and two bystanders were slain in 2007. Sek has been charged with manslaughter.
Wow. I don't even know what to say about that. That is just unbelievable.
I thought the first thing I thought of was, again, your column about people not wanting to have their pictures because they might be wanted or something. This guy, you go to the story, and there's a, you know, and I saw this on USAPlayers.com. There's a great picture of him just smiling, thumbs up. Woohoo! Oh, I was fun. And, of course, the Royal Mounted Canadian Police were like, woohoo, thanks. We know where to find you.
Oh, man, that is so sad. Unbelievable. Well, you know, I need to be cheered up, so I'm going to listen to the hotline. 813-448-1120. You call that number, we use your clip. We'll give you something cool. And this comes from John from Michigan. Let's take a listen.
Maybe you didn't get any calls on the hotline because nobody knows what call is anymore. Maybe you should have said flat the hotline. Nobody uses the word call. So if you tell us flat the hotline, maybe you'll get some more calls.
You know, I have to admit, when I first heard the clip, it took me a couple of times through, like, what is he talking about? And now I get it. So if it's a real interesting clip, they would just smooth flat. Or I don't know what they would do.
See, this is what I like. Our listeners listening to us talk about inane stuff on the show, and then turning it around to more content on the show later on.
Yes.
Way to go, John. I'm impressed. Somebody from Michigan was able to do that. I'm impressed.
Very good. Very good. Well played.
All right. For your creativity, John, we are going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Ante Up.
Yes, they are. They're my favorite. I only play with those cards when I'm in the home game. That's it. I won't play any of the cards anymore.
That's right.
All right. Well, we have a mailbag from Florida, which is... You know, somebody, like, just carried it to the front door of the office. They didn't even mail it. From Michael Jackal. I hope that's
I love that name. You know, I think about, like, C.J. Craig doing the Jackal on West Wing. Did you ever watch that?
No.
Oh, there's an episode where she does the Jackal. But, all right. It would be funnier if you had seen it.
So. Oh, man. Well, it's either Jackal or Jakal, but he says he's been playing online play money, and he's been playing in the Free League poker tournaments. But now he's wondering if he's playing for real money, and his goal is to double his buy-in. Is it poor etiquette to sit down, play at a cash table, double up on the first hand, and get up and cash out? Now, I'm pretty sure we've covered this at some point on this show.
But it bears repeating sometimes, does it not?
I know. I just feel like it's more of a Morse code repeating. It feels like it's da-da-da-da-da-da. We're, like, doing it a lot, but... we've gotten through the whole legal etiquette thing. It's obviously legal to do this, but I would consider it poor etiquette. You should at least let them know that you're leaving soon or something as far as etiquette, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that, you know, you're going to tick a lot of people off.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say this too, not that I'm trying to encourage people to do this because I think it's a Deutsche Bank move, but here's the other thing. I don't know of anybody who's been followed out to the car and got punched in the head, you know, unless they did this to Sofon Sek at the table. It's real douchey, but, you know, it's your money.
Yeah.
You know, do it. You're probably going to live. You're just going to... I'll just hit and run to different casinos. How's that?
And I think we've said this as well. I mean, it's more prevalent online than it is... In a brick and mortar, because you got to physically look these people in the face, get up and walk away, and you've traveled all the way down there, you know. But if you got to roll out of bed, log on, you can easily just change tables or roll back into bed. So it's more prevalent there. But yeah, it is sort of a poor etiquette move, and you know, it's not that we don't do it, but it's not the greatest thing to you know, endear yourself to your fellow poker players.
Well, the proper etiquette during the mailbag is to give our winner some swag, and we will be happy to do that. And, Michael, we will send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. Send us your address, and send us your other letters out there to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Well, we have a whole new mystery this week, and I love the title, Case of the Tilting Detective. So let's see what happens.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, The Case of the Tilting Detective. We are in hour two of an online multi-table tournament knockout, sporting a field of 1,300, and the antes have started. Stack sizes range from 3,500 to 20K, but most players have 8 to 10K. Under the gun plus one fold, EP limps, folds to me in the cutoff with King of Hearts, King of Spades. So far, simple enough. I'm going to raise it to 4X, a little extra for the limper. The button will smooth call, and after the blinds fold, our limper calls.
It's very painful, sir.
Three of us see the flop of 6 of Hearts, 9 of Hearts, 3 of Hearts, and our early position limper checks. I think this is a pretty reasonable board for a C-bet, so I'm going to bet just a bit over half the pot, or 1,800.
I'm a creature of habit, sir. I'm a creature of habit.
The button quickly folds, but then the EP smooth calls the 1,800. What hand limps and then check calls here? The turn is the 9 of diamonds and the EP limper checks. What do you think here? Is it a flush, or did top pair just make trips?
Well, I know you're busy, and I took up enough of your time already. Just one more thing.
If your read happens to be trips, I know you're going to check behind. But what if your read's a draw?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Scott, you know, we're having a fantastic cruise in March, the 25th to the 29th.
Can't wait.
I know.
Love to get on the high seas.
Yeah, I know we pimp it a lot. But it's real exciting to know that 6-time bracelet winner TJ Cloutier is going to be on the boat playing with us, you know, hitting the craps table.
Doing yeah, I'm going to be at the craps table with him, man.
Yeah, whatever he does. And he's also going to offer a seminar as well. So we thought, you know what, we should talk to TJ again. I know I got to interview him that time on a chance meeting at Foxwoods, and it was kind of a quick thing. We talked about his name. We talked about the video game. But I wanted to, you know, pick his brain a little more about some stuff and, you know, put him in the magazine and just let the Ante Up Nation get to really know this guy. So I had a chance to talk to him last week. I know you weren't there. You were busy doing whatever it is that you do in your house. So I gave him a call, and here's the interview with TJ. Real gracious, and I had a lot of fun with it. Who taught you how to play poker way back when, and exactly when was that?
Well, when it was when I was 17 years old, which would have been about 53 years ago. Nobody taught me anything.
No one taught you.
You learn by the seat of the pants in those days. You know, I was caddying on a golf course, and we'd go out and do on the weekends and take two doubles for the day and take our money into the caddy shack, and there was somebody there playing poker. And we'd work all day and they'd end up with the money.
Well, you know, the reason I ask, too, is, you know, you've done a lot of poker teaching in your lifetime, whether it's,
right,
you know, the books or the video games or seminars. And I just wondered if maybe there was something that inspired you to want to teach others back when you were younger.
Mainly, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I like to see people improve their game and stuff like that. I mean, you can only teach so much. You can't teach the things you're born with. You can't teach that feel factor that real top players have. You know, that's something you're either born with it or not.
Well, you know, you brought up what you can teach, you know, and you've been associated with a lot of these instructional poker outlets. But, you know, you recently signed with or joined DeepStacks University.
Right.
And that was founded here in Florida. How does DeepStacks differ from the others for you?
It's a little different concept. You know, I mean, we're doing modules right now that are going to be put out. And then they're going to have a, like they call a preview.
Right.
Which is for nothing, where the people come in and they hear some of the stuff, and then they sign up to come to the regular course, you know, seminars. And then the people that are involved with it ask a bunch of poker questions that a lot of people don't ask. I mean, different situations and stuff that you don't read about very often. And so that and they're getting different people like Manazal and Tom McAvoy and myself, and they'll ask the question. They probably, I don't know exactly what they're asking them, but I know what they ask me, you know, and then I give what I think is the right answer, and then they put it in the form of, they'll give you like three or four different answers, and you got to pick the right one, you know, and on these situations and scenarios, and it's really good. It's a very good concept. The best way to know about it is to get on, you know, go ahead and sign up on that site, and do some of the freebies and see if you like it or not, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know another way people can get exposed to it too is to come on our cruise, because you'll be sailing with us in March. And you're going to give a little taste of the seminar. What can our cruisers expect from that experience?
Oh, well, I'll tell you the truth. I'll have something prepared for it, but also I found out in the long run, if you run an open questions and answers session, that's always the best, because people come up with very good questions, and then you can answer them, you know, right on the give an honest answer to them, and what you would do in that situation and stuff, and it seems that it really worked good. Those and what we call the labs that we do at WPT are very, very, very good.
Now, is there something in particular you like teaching? Do you like doing the labs the most, or is it just a Q&A that you like?
I like doing the labs the least, because I don't... If they did them a different way, I'd like them the best, but the students seem to like them the best.
Okay.
The reason I like them the least is that there's a lot of hands that you'll deal out, and nobody has a hand to play.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, what I have suggested is that you set up the decks.
Oh, yeah.
And say there's 10 people on the table, so you set up the first 20 cards and leave the rest of it random. So that if you did it at, say you got five different tables going, and you dealt them out at each table, you'd have different people would have the same cards as they do on other tables, but the flops would be absolutely random.
Right.
And that way it gives you something new, but it would always give you the... Somebody, two or three people, are always going to have playable hands, so you got plenty to teach on and comment on. See, if everybody's getting, you know, terrible hands, and they all hold them until the hand's over, and then they turn them over and you critique off that, but there's not much to critique of if they've all got terrible hands and they all throw them, you know, none of them want to play them.
Right.
So that's why I've always been in favor of the other way. And the other way would I think, keep the instructors more interested in it. Although I will say this about WPT. They got a very good crew there.
Right.
And Steve Stacks is going to have a real good, is from what I understand, is going to be real, real good. I know we've got a mixture of the older guys like me and Tom, and then some in the middle, and then quite a few young guys, up-and-coming people. So,
right.
I haven't heard them yet, I'll tell you the truth. And you know me, I'm a little skeptical until I do hear them. Because I've seen too many, you know, these 1- and 2-year wonders over the years. So...
Well, you know, a lot of people who are just starting to learn to play poker are probably going to come across your way again with this new Deep Stacks. And so, if you had one bit of advice that you could tell them, what would be the most important lesson you would tell somebody?
Be observant.
Be observant.
I think that's the number one thing, because people give you so much information by how they act and when they're looking at their cards and little nuances that they have that you can pick up tells and stuff on them. You know, that's why I don't advocate ever having, you know, these iPods and all this stuff with the earphones on.
Right.
Because there's so many people that tell you what's going on just by listening to them. And a perfect example was Jamie Gold.
Right.
You know, I mean... Jamie Gold and Emerald Slim both had a way of talking when they had a hand and a way of talking when they didn't have a hand. And if you were sharp enough to pick it up, and thank heaven I was, I could tell you what they had when they had a hand and when they didn't have a hand every time.
Wow.
And, I mean, it got down one time with Amarillo Slim and Montserrat and Mont Luby and Mike Sexton and myself in an Omaha tournament. And he busted both of them, and then I busted him. But he busted them because they hadn't figured out the way he was talking when he had a hand and when he didn't.
Right.
Not that they couldn't. They were both very, very good players. But that wasn't their strong suit. And then when we got hit up, I mean, I made a jack-high flush with three on the board, and I mean, four on the board, and I knew it was good as gold with him, just by the way he was talking, you know.
Wow. Now, when you're on the ship, if there was enough interest in our poker room, what game and limit would you prefer to play?
Me?
Yeah.
I like No Limit Hold'em the best.
Okay.
And my favorite size... It's probably, you know, but a lot of people don't like to play. I like 10 and a quarter or 25 and 50 blinds.
Okay.
But a lot of people prefer to play cheaper, like 2.5 and 5.10, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that seems to really be popular nowadays. So I guess 5 and 10. I mean, I go up to Windstar and I never played 2 and 5 in my life till I went up there. But I go up and play it once in a while. It's something to do and, you know, I mean, it keeps you playing pretty decent. You know.
And that leads into my next question, because I wondered if you, what do you do to adjust to lower limits when you're facing players who have smaller bankrolls and lesser experience like that?
Well, you know, you can tell right off of that who's desperate and who's not when they're playing.
Okay.
And the desperate ones don't really do too well at it. They're satisfied with, you know, they're playing 5 and 10, they make it $25 to go. You can't protect a hand.
Yeah.
Making the $25 to go and stuff, and so they make a lot. They make playing against them a lot easier. The people that are not desperate, that have some money and are playing within their bankroll, then you got to play real poker with them, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you can tell right away. That's the whole idea. When you first sit down in a new game, don't get in a big hurry to play hands. Get in a big hurry to know who's doing what and in what situation.
Right. Now, as a member of the Poker Hall of Fame, how shocked were you that Tom McAvoy, your friend and co-author for so many books, didn't make it this year?
Well, the reason he didn't make it was something that I wrote a blog about it. I don't know if you happen to read it on Poker Pages, but
wow.
The blog I wrote, none of us knew that they had to get 75% of the vote to get it.
Oh.
Okay? So, I mean, I pushed hard for Tom because I think he deserved to be in there.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys there that were like Phil Ivey and Daniel and that kind of ilk that probably will get in someday anyway, you know. But
right.
You got to put in, Hall of Fame means you've put in a lot of years into it.
Yeah.
And these people are too young. I thought the only ones that deserved to be on the ballot were Dan Harrington and Tom, maybe Barry Greenstein. You know, and Eric Seidel. I mean, the rest of them, I couldn't see where they put in enough time into it.
Even Sexton?
Well, Sexton was a given.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, I mean, we all voted for Sexton.
Right.
Okay, I mean, as far as I was concerned, he was the most deserving of them all.
Okay.
Okay. And then as far as I was concerned, Tom was the next.
Right.
Because he's done a lot for poker outside of actual playing, you know, I mean... with his books and his work on keeping smoke-free and all these different things.
Yeah.
And playing in lots and lots of charity tournaments and stuff that people never hear about. He paid his dues, you know.
Yeah.
And he was very, very disappointed when he didn't get in. But I thought he went about it the wrong way, and I had to slow him down. You know, I said, you let me push for you. I said, you don't push for yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you start pushing for yourself, you got no chance. You know, I mean, and of course his girlfriend wanted to push for him, and I don't blame her.
Right.
You know, I just wanted him to get in because I thought he deserved it. But he didn't get in this year. He'll probably get in next year, you know.
Okay.
But I gave a big in my blog. I also said that I didn't believe that poker media should be involved in the voting, and that's my own personal opinion. I thought they should have taken the Hall of Famers like they did, and the people on the PAC, you know, committee,
right,
which is players, you know, committee for the World Series of Poker,
right,
because at least you'd be getting people that play at different levels all the way up.
Right.
In poker, whereas most of your media that if they happen to play poker, they play very, very cheap.
Right.
And so whoever is the star for the month or the year is the one they're going to vote for. And that's not what the criteria for a Hall of Fame should be.
Okay.
You know, the criteria for a Hall of Fame is what you've done for a real body of work for a lot of years. That's all.
Well, now, you turned 70 in October, right?
Yeah.
And I mentioned your books, and I just finished reading Doyle's autobiography. Do you have any plans to write your own?
They've been trying to get me to do one for 10 years, and I don't know if I want to do one or not. If I do, I'll do it with Dana Smith, and we've been talking a little bit about it, but I don't think so.
No.
You know, I mean, what the heck? I mean, when you get right down to it, what are we but poker players, you know? that's why I've never understood some of this autographers, you know, hunters and all this stuff. I mean, they come on. I mean, it's nice, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, it's just our profession, you know. That's what we do.
Well, I mean, I can understand their side of it, though. I mean, you inspire a lot of people by the way you play. They see you on TV, they hear the stories, they read your books. You know, you do have a level of fame that they appreciate and want to get to know, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand where they're coming from. It's just that, you know, I mean, look at all the years that we played poker that it was considered pretty bad stuff. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when we used to go to church, I'd go with my wife on Easter and everybody come up and they'd ask what kind of work you do. We used to say, clue to your investments. You know, I mean, and then all this stuff came out on TV and all this stuff, and they all were seeking you down and wanting your autograph. That's the difference, you know.
Well, that, you know, that's a cute story, and I know that Doyle told a ton of stories in this book. Do you have, like, a favorite story you like to tell?
About myself?
Yeah.
Well, just that the favorite story is the one, the mystery hand there that happened in Shreveport. Of course, that's in the first book anyway. So, but that's no, I guess that's not even the favorite one is the one with Al Crux, where we were playing at the Bicycle Club while the Diamond Jim Brady tournament was on. We were in a cash game on the side,
uh-huh.
And he hadn't won a pot all day, and he was down to $465. We're playing No Limit Hold'em. Anyway, he brought it in for his whole 465, and the person two seats to his left held his hand up in front of his face, and he was getting a massage at the time. And he looked like he was going to call, but he decided not to, and he threw his hand away, and he got around to me on the button, and I had two tens, and I said, hell, I might have the best hand here, so I called it. And the dealer didn't see that I'd called it and dropped the deck on the muck.
Oh.
So that means they had to reshuffle everything back in. And when it came out king 10-4. Well, he had two kings and I had two tens.
Oh.
Well, on 4th Street come the fourth 10. And he was having such a bad day, he even lost his spot when he flopped top set. But the thing that's funny about it was, the guy that looked at his hand over there that was getting a massage, he had the other two tens in his hand.
Oh, no.
And he had decided not to play him, and the massage therapist, she confirmed that he threw away two tens.
Wow.
And so the dealer had a screw-up, and that's how bad luck Al Crux was having. They had to be a dealer mistake and shuffled back in for me to even have a chance to catch a ten, and I caught both of his tens.
Oh, my God.
Now, if you can beat that bad beat, you're Houdini.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, I speaking of bad beats, you know, I saw you at the World Series last year, and I wondered how disappointed were you that you didn't actually get into the main event.
Well, to tell you the truth, You know, I was there 35 days. It was nobody's fault but my own.
Okay.
And when I went down there on the about 11:45 there on the fourth day to sign up, and they told me it was, I mean, I never even got into where the cage was. The people come out and they said it's shut out. You know, they're not thinking anything. There's a lot of people being shut out. So I knew I was on the PAC committee, and I knew I could have worked around it and got in.
Okay.
But I thought it would show favoritism and all that stuff.
Right.
And so I didn't even attempt to. And it was not their fault. It was my fault. I could have signed up any of those days. I mean, I could have signed up for day four, you know, at any time. But I didn't. Just because of the sign-ups I had on the first 3 days, there was no rush to do it. But when all was said and done, I was there for 35 days, and I was burned out anyway. So, I mean, that's the first time I missed it since 1983.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I don't care. You know, right now, the big one is very nice for notoriety and all that stuff, and the money and all that stuff, but you got to be so lucky to win it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was shown. Darwin Moon, he got there, and he didn't know that much about poker, but he was a better player than he admitted to being.
Yeah.
But you notice he changed his whole game on the final table and did lots and lots of bluffing. Well, he did himself in. I mean, he wasn't a good shorthand player at all.
Right.
But you know, he's a real nice guy. In fact, I thought overall they had better players on the final table than they have had for quite a few years.
Wow.
And you know, with Ivy being there and everything, although, you know, I think Phil Ivy at some point might end up, as good a player as Norm Chad says he is.
Yeah.
But right now, he's not Doyle, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and I've played with Phil since he was 21 years old.
Right.
I think he's a great player, and he's got a great attitude for it and everything, but I think he's a better player when he plays the other games than he is in No Limit Hold'em.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't have any bracelets in No Limit. It's just shocking.
No. Well, he's not, that's not his best game. He started out in stud.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they play those mixed games there at the Bellagio all the time, so they don't play a lot of No Limit Hold'em anymore. So
now, some people may not realize that you were a talented football player and you played in the CFL. You played for Toronto and Montreal. I wondered, did it bring a smile to your face when you heard Montreal won the Grey Cup in November?
I to tell you the truth, I didn't know it until in December that they had won it. I don't follow it. You know, they used to cover it on TV down here all the time.
Yeah.
And now you see little bits and pieces about it, you know. And of course, their season starts a lot earlier than ours does here.
Yeah.
I was a good player in my day. I played tight end, and I played on a couple of real nice teams.
Okay, I got one totally random question to wrap it up. I read somewhere that you liked Barbra Streisand.
Yes.
So what's your favorite Babs song?
Memories.
Okay. Just wanted to see what you thought of and how far back you liked her.
Well, I like Purple People Eater by her, too, on her album. Believe it or not, she did a rendition of that. It was fantastic.
Wow.
But I think Memories is the best one.
Okay.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, Chris, this week we have a stud hand.
Stud, yes.
And that means that Lee Childs is on the bench. Because stud hands can only be analyzed by studs.
Oh, man.
So I will do the heavy lifting on this. I guess you can chime in.
Yeah, how's I'll it? Just I'll just sit back. Yeah, studs make that noise.
Okay. No! Burned again. Wow.
I'm on a roll, baby.
It comes from our good friend Chris Drake. He sent in a hand a week a long time ago, I think, and remember we had this big fight about whether he was a dude or a chick, and he is a dude.
Was it a fight?
It wasn't a fight. It was just an inquisitory discussion.
Okay.
All right, but I found this interesting because it's not just a stud hand. It comes from a online 8-game mix live game on PokerStars.
Okay.
All right, he's playing the 20-cent, 40-cent. And so there's a little bit different strategy, I think, that comes into play. And Chris brings up some points during it. So we'll see how interesting it really is.
All right, let me get my reporter's notebook out. I'm going to write down the stuff. All right, go ahead.
All right, so we're in the stud high rotation. One player sitting out. We have $6.10, the villain in the hand, $13.80. And the up cards are 10 of hearts, 5 of hearts, 5 of clubs, 9 of spades, and we have a 9 of diamonds door card with 4 of diamonds and 4 of clubs buried.
I don't know. I think maybe I play stud too tight. I think that I'm folding. I'm sorry, but I do. I think I'm folding. One of my nines are gone. There's a 10 out that's higher than my 9. You know, and I realize the 5s are probably burned. There's 2 5s there. But, you know, I mean, unless I catch a 3rd, 4 on the next street, which, you know, could happen, I don't even know. I mean, I guess if it's just a bring-in, I probably will call. But if somebody completes or whatever, I think I'm done with this hand. I'm not happy with it.
All right. Well, the 5 of club brings it in. The 9 of spades calls. 10 of hearts folds. And it gets to us. And our hero had very much the same reaction that you did, that normally he would fold this hand. But he's thinking it's shorthanded here.
Yeah.
And so maybe we need to loosen up a little bit.
Well, the 10 folded, too, so that's encouraging.
That does help. That does
I mean,
help.
I know there's only 2 9s left in the deck, but, you know, our 4s could be good here already. So with the 10 folding, I would probably call the bring-in and see what happens.
You know, and I think I would do that. And I think Barry Greenstein would do that, too.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Let's ask him. Oh, no, we can't. Sorry.
you know, because we just have the one, the 5 behind us, and because there's already 5 up, too, I'm not anticipating him raising. So I think we're going to get to see 4th Street cheap.
Okay.
Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I have to.
If we get lucky and we hit a 9 or a 4, then boom, we're in business. And if not, then we can probably get out of this.
Yeah.
All right. So we do call. The 5 of hearts gets out of the way, and we go to 4th Street 3-handed.
That's good.
5 of clubs picks up the ace of spades. The 9 of spades picks up the 8 of spades. And we get the 4 of spades. Spades everywhere.
Wow.
So, of course, now we have the 4 of spades and 9 of diamonds up. And the 4 of diamonds and the 4 of clubs underneath.
Huh. Wow. Well, that's awesome. I mean, that's what we asked for. It's what we needed. And I'm not too concerned about the ace because the 5 of clubs is the bring-in, so... Not that he would have raised with a, you know, or completed with an ace in the hole, but
it's less likely.
Yeah. It just seems like I'm not too worried about that. I guess the 9-8, of course, I'm worried about because, you know, he's got connectors suited, and why would he have played his 9 in the first place? So since I have a 9, he probably doesn't have a pair, so he's probably going for a flush. So we got to be careful. We got to hope we boat up too. Then.
Yeah. All right. Well, he said the 9 of spades, 8 of spades bets, and it's to us. But I'm guessing that means the ace must have checked then.
Yeah.
Because the ace would have been first to act here. But, all right, so it gets to us, so it just assuming checks around. So, you know, we got 2 pair here. Or, I mean, trips, I mean.
Oh, we have trips. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably going to raise because just in case you want to get the ace out, you know, I mean, we got 3-4, so, I mean, maybe a call is smart, too, until it gets to the better streets and then, you know, the bigger streets, and then you can unleash a raise of much more money, but I don't know. Maybe I call here. It's just that if this guy is drawn to a flush and a straight, you know, our cards aren't blocked. I only have 1 card that blocks that for him, so maybe I do raise, try to get out the ace 5 and go heads up with this guy. But I think there is a, you know, there is a case to be made to just call here too.
There could be. Depending, I guess I think the real problem with raising is that, you know, you get a 9 and a 4, you're really kind of telegraphing your hand.
Yeah.
A little bit, but, you know, I'm going to play my trips fast almost all the time, and particularly against straights and flushes. So.
I wouldn't stud 8. I would play them fast because I'm trying to keep that half of the pot away from the guy going low. But in regular stud, I almost feel like, you know, this guy's got to make, you know, perfect to make his flush if he's got perfect in the hole. And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't play, like you said, if I raise, if I'm playing him fast, then you're giving away your hand that you either have 3-4s or you have 9s up. So
and 9s up is probably less likely, too, because there's already 9 up, so you're really kind of...
Yeah, so maybe you don't raise yet. Maybe you wait till 5th Street. But
Well, interesting. We could go either way. Yeah. So our hero raises, though, but in retrospect, he wonders whether all those spades out there make it less likely the villain can complete his flush.
Definitely helps that he, you know, helps us. So, but again, we both agree. I mean, you can go either way with this. I like the raise just to get the ace five out in case he gets the case four and makes a wheel on us or has a pair. You know, who knows what could happen with him? But a lot of his cards seem to be out. So,
yeah, I'd much rather be heads up with my hand.
Yeah. So.
All right, well, we raise, and we do get the ace-5 out, and the villain does call. So now we're heads up going to Fifth Street, and our villain gets the jack of spades to go with this nine of spades and eight of spades. That's we get scary. The ace of clubs to go with our trips and nine.
Wow, that's scary.
It is, isn't it? Because now, you know, if he was working for a straight or a flush, he could have got there either place.
Yeah, you know what? I really think I'm check-calling here and hoping I fill up somewhere. I can't imagine this guy, you know, if he started with a 9 and raised with the 8, he's got to have made his hand now, either a straight or a flush. I think I'm check calling here.
Yeah, this is the real dilemma in stud here is that, you know, you can check because you're worried that he already has you beat, and if you check and he checks behind, then he gets a free card to get if he's not there.
Yeah.
But if you bet it out and he is already there, then you're going to get raised. You get to call another bet and then hope that you hit on the next card.
Yeah.
Or that he's raising, making you think of that on the second level thinking to get you the fold.
Yeah.
That's why I love stud.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I'm going with the check call again. I don't think that I'm going to bet into this guy now. It's such a dangerous board and fits right into what he was playing with and why he played this hand, I think. So he's got to have a flush already or a straight already. So I'm checking.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would help if how much we know about our villain here, and I don't think we know much, but and if he's the type that would bet on the come, which is what he would have done earlier.
Right.
And which is kind of an interesting play to make, then I'd feel more likely that he got there. But generally speaking, I think people, when they bet out before, it's not on the come, so I don't think he's there yet myself.
Yeah,
but obviously, he has a lot of outs to get there, no matter what it is. So.
Yeah. I mean, unless he had a monster hand like a 10-7 in the hole or something where he was open ended with the 10-7 of spades or something.
Yeah, but still, it's betting on the come is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I know.
But I mean, I would bet on the come there because I know I'm making my hand probably 80% of the time. So, but yeah, no, I definitely am check calling. Let's see what happens.
All right, well, our hero bets out and gets raised.
Ooh, yeah, yeah,
it's back to us. So I think we got our information. Unless again, like I said, it's second level thinking, but. I think we have to give him credit for having the hand right now, right?
Yeah, no, I definitely giving him credit here.
And I think we have to call and just hope. I mean, it was one more bet to hit the boat, at which point then we're ahead.
Yeah, yeah, we got 10 outs or whatever it is, so more than that now. So I would definitely call.
All right, so he calls, and our hero says he didn't realize that two of his boat cards are already out, so it's less likely. But still... this much money in the pot, I think you got to make that one bet and then hope you hit.
Yep.
All right, so we go to 6th Street. The villain gets to 3 of spades. Just gets better in case he's not already there. We get the 4 of hearts.
Oh, my God. We quadded up.
How's that?
Oh,
we're hoping
God.
To boat, and we quadded.
Oh, man.
Quadded a word?
I think quadded is a word now. It's a word now.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, now we're first to act, of course. Is there any question what we do here?
Yeah, we hope he has a flush and thinks that we only have 3 of a kind, and we bet out. But, yeah, I mean, you can't check here. It's just so foolish to check. I mean, it's so fishy, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's really the thing. It's really kind of fishy, so you're better off in this situation most times just betting out. And,
yeah.
You know, the guy folds, he folds. But, you know, but checking is just kind of, you know...
Yeah,
people mock that check. I think. But not that we're mocking our hero because that is exactly what he does. He checks, hoping for a check raise, and I think that's kind of a flaw here. That I don't think anybody's going to bet into this board when we check because I think people are going to assume that the check raise is coming.
Well, here's the other thing, though. I mean, if you just look at it from a different point of view, the fours are in the hole that he doesn't know about the opponent.
Right. Right.
So it is just 9-4. Ace 4, you know what I mean? So maybe you do, you know, bet thinking that you've made aces up or nines up or whatever, and it doesn't look that fishy, really. I mean, maybe you do check thinking that you only have nines up and you're hoping to get the showdown cheap, you know. So maybe you do check. It's not like quads or trips are showing. You know, it's just a pair of fours showing. So maybe you do check. Maybe checking's a good move here, and this guy's going to think that you only have, you know, two pair, and you're trying to get the showdown, and he'll bet, and then you can raise him. So
yeah, but again, we've been in this hand all the way down. You think we were in this hand with one pair, and now we just got our second pair?
No, I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I think he's got to give us credit for having something here.
Yeah.
A little bit stronger than two pair.
Yeah, I guess. I guess. It's just...
I mean, our board doesn't really scream straight or anything like that.
No.
So, I mean...
I know.
I don't know. I just think we're missing a bet by not betting and not worrying and trying to go for the check raise. But
all right. Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, it does seem kind of fishy, but there is an argument to be made that you could still just have two pair. You could have ace, nine, four, and you made aces up, and that, or I don't know. So who knows? But, yeah, let's bet out and see what happens.
All right. No, actually, we're checking.
Oh, he checks.
Yeah, remember, we're checking, hoping for a check raise.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, hoping for a check raise. That's right.
All right. And we get it because the villain bets. How's that?
That's awesome.
And we raise and we get called.
Okay.
Hey, we're kind of liking this hand now.
Yeah, especially the call.
Is reeling them in. All right, 7th Street, we get the almost meaningless King of Hearts. I mean, it does make our quads a little stronger. Actually, it doesn't. It is totally meaningless. It'll be the 8th.
Totally meaningless.
And, of course, we're going to bet out here, and the villain just calls, or flats, or smooths.
You got to be good there. They just call, right? What else could you?
Yeah. Whatever vernacular you want to use there.
Yeah.
And then the pot is pushed to the villain, Chris.
The guy calls with a straight flush?
He turns over 5 of spades, queen of spades, 9 of spades, 8 of spades, jack of spades, 3 of spades, 10 of spades. Every spade in the deck.
Every spade.
Straight flush.
And he just calls.
Calls.
Well, maybe he didn't know that a straight flush beat quads.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If I'm thinking back to what he is, and I don't know, obviously, because the hands are scrambled, you know, what cards he had where. But I find myself, this is one of the bigger problems with stud, is you get fixated on a hand that you're trying to make.
Yeah.
But you don't see the hand that you really do make.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give the villain credit here for thinking that he had a flush and felt like, hey, you know, boom, the boat's there. Or something like that, and they just didn't realize that he actually had the straight flush.
Yeah, like the pot was big enough that he had to hope the guy would just had trips or just
right.
Had
exactly.
Up and
exactly. He didn't want to get in a raising war and find out that he, you know, was behind a boat or something. And
straight flush over quad. See, now if you're playing in a brick and mortar room, you might have gotten a bad beat jackpot.
Yes. But you're playing in the anti-op hand of the week room. And we are going to send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. Chris, enjoy that and try to run that 10 bucks up to lots of money.
Well, here's the thing. If he had folded, like we said, early on, he might not have gotten a $10 staking package, but he would have saved some money on that hand. So,
yeah, which was less than $10. So, so how's that? All right, Chris, we appreciate it. And everybody else, send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and hopefully we'll get our studless Lee Childs back on the show very soon, because I know people love him on the show. We love him on the show.
We love him on the show. Hey, I want to thank T.J. Cloutier for answering the phone when I called him and being on the show. I appreciate that very much. Looking forward to seeing him on the cruise. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hi, this is Chris Cosenza from Ante Up Magazine.
Yeah.
Hey, TJ, how are you?
Just fine, Chris.
Hey, you got a couple minutes?
I was hoping you'd call about 7, but that's okay.
I can call you back. You want me to call you back?
Yeah, if you don't mind. I'm right in the middle of the Dallas game.
Yeah, okay, no problem. I'm watching it, too. I'll hang up.
Okay, call me back about 7.
All right, you got it.